Iron Man 2 topped the box office charts for the second week in a row. It's the first certified blockbuster of the summer, and this sequel is bigger, better, and even more portable. Debuting in Iron Man 2 is Tony Stark's new suitcase armor. And that's the sound of Iron Man's armor popping out of Tony Stark's carry-on bag and assembling itself around its inventor. And good news! The bad guy waits until he's fully robed before they finally get into it. As all fanboys know, Iron Man is based on the long-running Marvel comic book. And we want to hear today from fans, what do you think of the Shellhead's second shot on the silver screen? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can join the conversation at our website, too. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Glenn Weldon blogs about comic books for NPR's Monkey See, and you can find a link to that, plus several clips from Iron Man 2 at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. But he's with us here in Studio 3. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And you and I are both, all right, full disclosure, comic book geeks.
Good.
Did you ever think that you'd be sitting here talking about an Iron Man movie?
I know, or seeing Iron Man backpacks and pencil cases on the streets. It's great. I mean, he's a C-lister, let's face it. He always has been.
Always has been.
Low profile. He's got a huge impact in the comics because he's the wealthiest guy in the Marvel Universe. He bankrolls a lot of stuff.
And has had various personas and various iterations.
Absolutely.
Comic book characters. I don't want to break it to you badly, but they change depending on who's writing and who's drawing.
Absolutely. But at the center, you have this guy who, let's remember, is a weapons manufacturer, basically. He's a drunk, he's a womanizer, and yet he's not the kind of guy you would go to build a summer tentpole movie around, necessarily.
No, not really.
But he works here, and the reason it works here in Iron Man 2, just as it did in Iron Man the first one, is because you've got, at the center of it, perhaps the most inevitable piece of casting in film history. You've got Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, who is Tony Stark in a way that very rarely happens. And certainly in superhero movies, you haven't seen it since Christopher Reeve, that sort of affinity between the character and the actor.
And he has such fun with the role. And as you say, no, in some iterations, Tony Stark has been the military-industrial complex.
Right.
So we should, and here he's much more of a libertarian anti-hero.
Right.
But he comes to life in this film. He really brings the character to life.
He really does. He's smirking without being smug. He has this sort of central charm, which is the one thing that the comics always have a through line. And in fact, right now, you talked about various iterations. There is a comic called Invincible Iron Man, which launched pretty much at the same time as Iron Man came out. It's written by Matt Fraction. It's a great series. It captures the same sensibility. It's just a lot of fun. It's the best Iron Man comic to come around in a long time.
Oh, that's I have to say, I don't read a lot of capes.
Uh-huh.
You know, so
understood.
But nevertheless, I have all the early Iron Man comics from, you know, late 60s, early 70s,
uh-huh.
and those are worth 10, 15, 25 cents.
Yeah, right.
But there is so much in this movie that speaks to people like you and me who read these comic books. That, for example, the suitcase armor, it does picky violate the laws of physics.
Just a little bit, yeah. Okay, it's A, physically impossible. It is B, seriously cool.
Yeah.
And in fact, I got into a little back and forth with a guy, Ian Buckwalter, who reviews movies for the NPR website. In his review, and to my face, he was dissing the suitcase, saying, yes, exactly what you said. It defies the laws of physics. I thought that was funny that he would choose to draw his battle lines there.
But as opposed to the suit then flying
exactly
through the air.
Exactly.
Doing
and,
lots of other
and
things.
Zaps people with its hands. Okay,
the repulsor ray.
The repulsor. Thank you. Yeah. Nicely done.
Mm-hmm.
Nicely done. But it's just... In fact, it is such a central part. It has a long and storied history in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not ignore that.
The suitcase.
The suitcase, right. And in the movie, you know, he puts it on, and it's not a major central part of the NPR of the Iron Man mythos, but it is. It's like NPR without the tote bags. You need it. It's part of it.
It's part of the deal.
Right.
It is like you can't do Iron Man without Pepper Potts.
Exactly. And you know, actually, when the trailer came out and you glimpsed the briefcase in passing, I got a text from a friend of mine, which is the single nerdiest text I have ever received. Which, trust me, is saying something. And all it said was suitcase! Exclamation point! Exclamation point! Exclamation point! It hits a nerve. But there's a lot of those kind of things in the movie. Some of them bring the movie to a dead stop. All the stuff about building the Avengers, you know,
that's towards the end of the film.
Toward the end of the film, right. That's fine. But in the background...
Well, that's sort of a forward promotion, as we call it in radio.
Yeah, those scenes are not really servicing this movie. They're servicing the movies to come, which is, you know, I'm of two minds about. When you just glimpse Captain America's shield in the background, that's mm-hmm. fine.
That's fine.
When you see the Captain America comic book, that's fine. It's for us. I eat that up with a big spoon. But I'm not... If you're just appealing to me, you're not going to make your money back on this movie.
Well, there is also then the character of Nick Fury,
right.
Who plays a pretty substantial part in this picture. Now, I first met Nick Fury as the top kick of Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos.
Exactly.
And he's gone on to live a very, very, very long life, mm-hmm. Became a Nick Fury agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. and is now the top kick of S.H.I.E.L.D., played by, of all people, Sam Jackson.
I know. But he's great. He and Downey Jr. kind of know what movie they're in, and they're having a lot of fun.
Yes.
It's not so much winking at the camera, but almost.
Almost.
Sam,
he's got a patch.
If he was, you wouldn't be able to tell. But, you know, I'm not sure that Mickey Rourke is in the same movie as these other two people. But he commits, man.
He does.
He is really...
He works very hard.
Works very, very hard. And even though there's the scene in this movie, which I think we can do without from now on, which is the scene where somebody stands over a dead body and shouts, "No!" We've had enough of those.
Yes. Well, it's giving motivation
right.
to the bad guy.
Exactly.
But, of course, he's not really the bad guy. The bad guy is Sam Rockwell, who plays Justin Hammer.
See, here's an interesting distinction to make. This is a big, stupid summer action film, sure. Mm. It's got big explosions, sure. But it has a different sensibility than something like Transformers, than something like 2012, because Favreau, the director, came from indie films. He is an actor himself. So he would much rather, you can tell in the opening minutes of this film, that he would much rather aim his camera at a couple of actors talking than the big action set pieces. Mm-hmm. There's a scene in this movie where Sam Rockwell talks about guns for what seems like 3 minutes of screen time. And it would be on the cutting room floor of something like Transformers. But it's great. Favreau trusts Sam Rockwell to do something with that scene, and he does it.
Here's an email from Matt. Short and sweet, Iron Man 2 was a decent sequel. Notable prose, Sam Rockwell's performance steals the show, complimented by Mickey Rourke's incredible screen presence. Notable cons, Don Cheadle's roadie just wasn't buying it.
Yeah.
This
is our second roadie, yes. Don Cheadle is an immensely likable actor. Nothing wrong with him. But again, because of Favreau, they spent a lot of time in the first movie just showing that these two guys like each other, mm-hmm. when he was played by Terrence Howard. That's all those scenes were doing, and you still have some of those scenes, but again, the origin movie is always going to be, in my humble opinion, the origin movie is always going to be better because the origin story is the hero story.
With Wolverine.
Well,
all right.
notable exception. That movie, by the way, had three no shots, so I think that's three too many. But telling this the hero's origin, who he is and how he came to be, is compelling. Once you get past that, you just have a bunch of dudes in suits wailing on each other, and that's tough to keep compelling.
Even in comic books sometimes.
Exactly.
We're talking today with Glenn Weldon, who blogs about comics for NPR's pop culture blog, Monkey See. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. James is on the line from San Antonio.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the sequel. I was worried they were going to overload it and just make it terrible, but I really enjoyed it. I think Robert Downey Jr. kind of ties these movies together, because without him, they'd just be kind of more popcorn fare.
Exactly.
Well, that seems to be the formula that has, in general, worked. Get A-list actors.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking Scarlett Johansson in this movie. We're
right.
talking, who else? Of course, Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper Potts. Even as the voice of the computer, Paul Bettany.
Yeah.
I mean, he's great.
It goes against... It's exactly the same thing where, okay, a lot of this movie is going to be robots fighting each other. A lot of this movie is going to be explosions, but you need to give people something else to look at when that's not happening. And if you have Sam Rockwell up there, Sam Rockwelling around like he does, you're going to stay in the seat.
And, of course, the real bad guy is Gary Shandling, who plays the...
Oh, yeah.
Well, anyway. James, thanks very much for the phone
Definitely.
Call.
Definitely. And I just want to say, I love the way they put the Armor Wars, they wove it in there. That
yep.
was great. That
okay.
was
great. Geek boy.
Yes,
right.
There we go.
Thanks very much.
My people.
Let's see if we can go next to Mark. Mark with us from Columbia, South Carolina.
How y'all fellas doing? How y'all doing?
Not too bad.
Hey, I'm gonna tell you, it's like the last caller said. It's like Robert Downey Jr. He almost like make that suit just seem almost human.
Didn't you love the scene where he gets drunk and dances in the suit?
Yes, again.
Yeah. he's arrogantly smooth with it though. It's like how he can make the suit just come alive. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Iron Man is not like Superman per se. He has like superpowers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you got to know how to maneuver and use this suit to your advantage. And he just, it doesn't matter how the other characters was able to put their powers together. He knew exactly how to get in there and just get in there and stop them from overcoming him. And it's like they have the lady that is with S.H.I.E.L.D. It's so much in this movie because I thought it was like a guy movie, but me and my wife and kids, we went to go see it. My wife was like, when they had that briefcase, they were trying to get to him on that racetrack.
Right.
And we didn't know what the briefcase was for, but when they finally got it to him and how it just, you know, just almost like infused itself into his body, like, wow, this is awesome, man. It's a great movie for anybody to go see. Part two and part one, it almost like complements each other.
Mm-hmm.
So once they get the whole sequel together and bring all these other different heroes in there, like they have different little places in the movie. I don't know whether or not it's interesting, like with mm-hmm. the shield and the hammer. And I know people know who owns the hammer and the shield, and how they're all trying to put it together. Once they put this comic together, it's going to be awesome. So I can't wait till they get to the climax of that show.
Mark, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. We're talking about Iron Man 2, made from a C-list Marvel character. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, an A-list show from from NPR News. And again, we're with Glenn Weldon. And as you look at these films, clearly, some of them have been, like Iron Man 1 and 2 now, tremendous successes. Mm-hmm. 2, already a tremendous success.
Right.
You look at others, Daredevil, another C-list character, enchantingly drawn and written sometimes by the likes of Frank Miller, among
exactly.
others.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed...
Oh, boy. Well, there's a sense of fun in Iron Man, in mm-hmm. the Iron Man franchise now. There was no sense of fun in Daredevil. It took itself so seriously, and I think that's something that can doom a comic as well. You know, we love comics. That's great. But there's a sensibility sometimes that people who make the comic book movies have to say, no, take them seriously. This is serious. So
they got away with it with Batman.
Well, yeah, but again, that's Chris Nolan, who understands what the thing's about. It's dark, sure, and mm-hmm. it's grim, yes. But, I mean, Chris Nolan also comes from indie films. He trusts actors. He's not just throwing a lot of stuff together. The Daredevil movie, I mean, when you put Ben Affleck in a red pleather suit and you have him stare down into the street saying, you know, I am the knight or whatever it was he said. I mean, mm-hmm. that's never going to work.
Yeah, but then you have Tony Stark literally saying, I am trying to cure my heart.
Yeah, I know. Yes. Yeah, yeah. But that's done with playfulness. There was no playfulness in Elektra. There was no playfulness in Daredevil. This movie has a sensibility about it that separates it from a lot of others.
Let's go next to Chris. Chris with us from Columbus.
Hi. A couple things occurred to me. But at any rate, one thing a friend of mine said that I feel is pretty important. A lot of filmmakers tend to forget that comic book fans don't read comic books for the action. I mean, especially if you get past a certain age. Post-adolescence and whatnot, you know, you're going for the drama, the angst, and that. And I feel that the first Iron Man was far more interesting because it showed what Stark had to go through in order to become Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
And in this film, not that kind of attention was not paid even to the development of Whiplash,
mm-hmm.
what his story was all about. And I felt the film had just too many tedious action sequences. And when you know that filmmakers can see anything they want you to see, it just becomes a little bit enervating. The second thing I thought of is now I know what was in the suitcase that they were chasing after in Ronan the
right. And in Pulp Fiction, maybe.
And Pulp Fiction, too.
Yeah,
Ronan, another Frank. And another film going to the screen, as I understand.
Right,
another
yeah.
comic book going to the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everything Frank Miller ever wrote is going
yeah,
to the screen,
right.
including ones he doesn't get credit for.
That's right.
Chris, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks for having me on.
And is it important that these films take their nods to the fanboys? Or is it simply saying, look, 99% of the people who are going to see this picture, we hope, never read Iron Man.
Right. No, I mean, I think you can do a little bit of a nod, a bit of a wink, but if you are bending yourself over backwards to kind of have insert all these scenes which don't really service the movie you're making, but the movie you plan on making.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm of two minds about this whole creating a single unified world for all these films to exist in, because that just gets you into a whole thing of another layer of, well, the continuity has to be consistent between this one and this one. And that's
well, they're not in the comic books.
Exactly, exactly. And but even in the comics, when people get, people like my fellow fanboys and girls get really, their knickers in a twist over continuity, and this has to be true in this book and this book, story dies.
Well, you know, Peter Parker actually invented the web fluid.
Oh, here we
come
go.
Come on, you know.
Neil.
Of course, the only other thing, it's the only thing he ever invented, though he was a genius.
He was a genius, yes. And they've gone to organic web shooters, and they've gone back.
But in any case, Spider-Man really ran out of gas in Spider-Man 3.
They threw in a lot of villains, and that's usually the sign of a death throw of a franchise.
And got really, really super serious with the...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so, although the Spider-Man 3 did have that dance scene, which is universally hated among the fanboy community. I dug it. I loved it. It was a lot of fun. It's what Sam Raimi should be doing. It's that kind of silliness. But yeah, they're rebooting it. Again, my point earlier, that you tell the origin over and over again. They certainly do this in the comic every 5 years.
Yes.
They just kind of say, here he is again. Here's the secret origin. Yet again, not so secret anymore, but we're going to keep telling you it. So yeah, they're rebooting the franchise, and I guess they're going to bring it into the whole universe that they're doing, this building the common universe now. If it works, it works.
And in the meantime, we can wait for Avengers.
That's right. That's right.
And I guess it's going to be another bad... you know, we don't even have to go to the comic book store.
Well, actually, you should. As I say, the Iron Man comic by Matt Fraction is really good.
Wednesday, New Comics Day.
That's right.
Glenn Weldon blogs about comics for NPR's pop culture site Monkey See, npr.org. You can read him there. Thanks very much. Tomorrow, from Islam to America, we'll talk with Ayan Hirsi Ali about her new book, Nomad. Be with us for that. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.